Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
The president signed the Stafford student loan measure a few weeks ago, which I was actually at the Oval Office for that signing. I'm on the House Education Committee. It was a hard-fought compromise. In this academic year, it cuts the rate from 6.8 to 3.8%. That's 11 million students across the country that use that program. Again, in out years, it ties the rate to Treasury notes, similar to other forms of consumer credit. And it's something that, you know, we're all going to have to watch closely in terms of making sure, you know, we don't find ourselves back in the soup again. But when he signed that measure, which, you know, was a rare bird in Washington, to have any bill pass and to have actually Republicans and Democrats in the same room, you know, he declared our work is not done. And he's absolutely right. I mean, the issue of college affordability is not just about managing debt. And it's really about sort of a long-term trend that is really, I think, a serious challenge to middle-class families and to our country's ability to refresh its workforce. And so... You know, he gave that remark in the Oval Office, and to his credit, he did a two-day swing in upstate New York in your territory, where he laid out an agenda, which I think is a very aggressive, ambitious agenda about trying to put some incentives out there to control costs. And, you know, again, as you know, and a lot of your listeners know, the decision to enroll at a college these days, particularly in the private sector, is almost like buying a house. I mean, the cost of tuition right now is something that most middle-class families can't possibly save fast enough for to be able to handle. And we've got, I think, a really lousy system of informing families and students about what the value of a degree from an institution is versus another. And that's really what I think is the most significant proposal, which is that we've got to start putting into place, you know, a transparent, useful system of ranking, you know, these institutions, which, you know, some of them have dreadful graduation rates, some of them have, you know, really questionable gainful employment outcomes, even though they promise the sun, moon, and the stars, you know, when they're sending out the glossy brochures.
Donald Trump did that, didn't he?
that was the classic, you know, and, but, you know, there's a lot of these schools that advertise at 3 o'clock in the morning and you know, use, by the way, taxpayer-funded programs like Pell Grants and Stafford Loans to finance very high tuitions and then have outcomes which, you know, high default rates and high debt levels.
So should we take those? Should we not finance those Pell and other loans with bad outcomes?
I mean, when the taxpayers are putting up $150 billion a year in student aid, which is really where, if you total up everything, Perkins, Stafford, Pell, that's what the size of this program is. And, yeah, I think at some point, you know, if there's bad actors out there, and if you put them on probation and they still don't clean up their act or show better results, and, you know, you've got to, you can't do it in the, you know, unfair, arbitrary manner. Again, you've got to have sort of, you know, warning flags to tell institutions, hey, you know, this is not even close to the median out there, then, yeah, I mean, I don't see how anyone can justify spending money, which, again, now is becoming very sizable, both for the taxpayer and for families, on institutions that just really aren't producing anything of value. So, you know, this is going to shake things up, Alan. I mean, and that's why I don't dismiss this as you know, just sort of rhetoric. There's going to be resistance within the higher education sector to this kind of an approach. But, you know, is when I'm out there talking to families and you know, chambers or whatever, they're basically saying, you know, the solution to this can't just be bigger and bigger debt, even if it's on more, you know, manageable, reasonable interest rate terms. That's just putting air in a tire with a leak and that never fixing the leak.
You know, I think my wife and I could be described as people who've worked hard during our lives. And when our kids went to Cornell, it was $25,000 when both of them were in a year. And so that was $50,000 cash, which is probably like $80,000 a year, you know, before taxes. I don't know. But the point really is I don't know how anybody can afford $60,000 a year.
And that's why, again, in terms of, well, why did this bill pass and nothing else passes in Washington? And why is the president, out of all the issues that are out there, spending 2 days on the road talking about it? Because I'll tell you what, Alan, the political power of this concern, this is what people really do at the kitchen table talk about.
Sure.
And whether you're a grandparent or a parent, and particularly if you're a young person. And by the way, we have big workforce needs. I mean, as tough as this economy is right now, you know, guys our age are going to start hitting the, you know, the retirement rolls. And we've got critical...
You're very kind to me, by the way. You've got years before you catch up with me. Go ahead.
Well, in any case, I mean, there's going to be workforce needs in this country. And so this is not really just about students and their families. It's really about, you know, the country's ability to fill key skills.
Right. And also, Joe, it has profound questions associated with it, like creating two societies, the healed and the non-healed. I mean, that's what's really scary about it. And in some cases, it perpetuates Jim Crow and other things.
Absolutely. I mean, higher ed, I still believe, is the great equalizer. And to the extent that, you know, kids are looking at $50,000 a year for Cornell or Georgetown, or, you know, that's basically just, it's for the haves and not for the have-nots.
Yeah. Yeah. And I assume that you will be hearing after some of your for-profit institutions and some of the people who aren't delivering hear this, they're going to get scared and they're going to call you up. What do you say to them?
You know, I say to them, look at, you know, I'm somebody who fought hard to enlarge Pell Grants. Again, it was frozen when I first came to Congress at $4,000 maximum award. We got it up to $6,000, and there's an index to allow it to continue to grow. I'm somebody who fought to keep interest rates low for the Stafford Student Loan Program. But guys, you know, I'm not doing this just to, you know, finance institutions that aren't getting the job done. And you've got to be part of the solution here. And if you don't think you can even meet what I think will be, you know, very reasonable standards, I don't think anybody's going to be, you know, looking to have colleges show that, you know, 90% of their graduates are gainfully employed, you know, 2 years after getting a degree. I mean, there's going to be reasonableness in these standards. And I've talked to Arne Duncan and other people about this issue. But at some point, it is unacceptable to say, the taxpayers' representatives who are funding all these programs that these institutions are using should just butt out and let them sort of proceed as if nothing, you know, should change.
Joe Courtney, I love talking to you. You talk from the heart, you're articulate, and we very much appreciate your presence here. I want to talk to you when we come back about the great standoff on the budget.
Sure. Thanks, Alan.